Hey there, welcome back to Dear Skylar, where I talk to all kinds of incredible people about topics that I'm asked about as a transgender educator and advocate, things like sports and race, mental health, gender, sexuality, and really everything in between and beyond. So last week, I talked to Angel Flores about what it meant to pick between our sports and our identities, and if we even had to pick. And we had an amazing conversation about Angel's own experience in this. And so this week, I wanted to dive a little bit further into this conversation about what it means to be our authentic selves. No matter who we are, I think it's often a consideration or sometimes even a compromise about how much of ourselves we bring to certain moments, to certain people, to certain interactions. And I think sports present a time for most people where that consideration might be the most tense, right? How much of ourselves can we bring? And so this episode, I wanted to focus on that question specifically with regards to identities such as queer and trans, but expansively as well. So today we're going to talk about the answer to this question. How do we bring our authentic selves to sport? To discuss this, I spoke with athlete and Olympian Erica Sullivan. Well, Erica, I'm really excited that you're here. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
We are in Austin, Texas, where you live, where I am in a tiny home Airbnb.
Modern rustic
look. Yes, modern rustic look with a construction next door. So if we hear any sound interruptions, that's why.
Okay.
But I'm super stoked that you're here. I've obviously known of you and we've been like, I think pseudo friends on, I say pseudo friends because we just texted a couple times.
Yes.
Communicated about sports and such. But this is the first time I'm getting to meet you in person, which I'm so glad that you're here. I know a lot about you, but I would love if you could just give a quick, intro of who you are, name and pronouns and any, short bio that you want to share for our listeners.
Name is Eric Sullivan, go by the pronoun she, her. And long story short, I am Tokyo 2021 silver medalist in the 1500 meter freestyle. And started training with Sandpipers at age 6, and I stayed with them until I was 21. And through then, I kind of gained my notoriety through being openly gay, one of the first people in USA Swimming to do so, and being a hardcore Taylor Swift fan. So after I won the silver medal, that kind of picked up and kind of blew up on social media for a couple weeks there. And then went to Austin and started my school, collegiate career, where I'm currently a film major. And I just finished my sophomore year at University of Texas.
I have to say the first thing that I want to share with you is, so most of my swim career, I was swimming in the women's category. Mm-hmm. And most of my swim career, I knew I was also queer. So at the time I thought I was a lesbian. Mm-hmm. And I saw nobody else like me. Yep. And you're also a mixed race like me.
Yes.
We're both also half Asian. So it's so interesting. I feel like I'm looking into like a mirror-ish version of myself some degree, a different side of what my life could have been had I not been trans. It's so meaningful for me to see you be so open about your sexuality because I know for me it was so lonely to see nobody else like me. And I'm sure that experience is like also yours to a degree. So I was curious if we could start by you talking a bit about that and kind of your experience being one of the first openly gay swimmers, especially in the women's category, because I find that the women's category feels more conservative, but you can let me know what you think.
Yeah. I don't know about like in terms of like political spectrum where people stand, but like I feel like due to social media, everyone just seems to be more like private on the women's side. And I feel like it's just because like men, they never post on social media, especially the USA Swimming men. Like very few of them have an active social media feed. And so there's no standard for them to like share their lives. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like on the women's side, we all have like better run social medias. Mm-hmm. So with that, people kind of expect more information to come from you.
I see. Yeah.
You know, and through that, I think a lot of people, if they are in a queer relationship, they tend to like keep it offline and keep it private. But for me, it's just like, if I love someone and I want to be happy with them, like obviously I want to post about them and I want to brag about them, you know? And so my decision to come out wasn't really this like big, crazy moment. The closet was just always like glass for me. Like people knew before I knew. And so I had a Tumblr account, very gay, and just like girls on girls on like fandom ships that I was obsessed with. Uh-huh, uh-huh. And through that, I think it started to get like picking up traction. And so at that point I was like, you know what? Like, why go through the mental strain to like hide it from people when I can just be open about it and like take that stress off my shoulders.
Yeah. That's amazing. I'm really glad. I love the image of like the glass closet as well. I think for a lot of us, actually our queerness is sometimes evident to others way before it is to us, which I find fascinating.
Yeah.
This like, go ahead.
Yeah. I just found like, I don't know, you know, were you publicly out as a lesbian before you
came out as trans? I wasn't. Okay. I was terrified to share that with people. I'm so openly trans. And everybody knows that. So I think people expect that I would have done the same with my like lesbian identity at the time. But I was on a team where there was so much homophobia, like just like not even at me. It was just like people just said the F word all the time. People always talked about how like I just have such a clear memory where I was sitting. We were sitting outside doing dry lands, like on the concrete or whatever. And one of the girls was just like so disgusted by this concept. There was two girls who kissed at her school. And she was like, the whole conversation was about this for like 20 minutes while we did drylands. And I was just like, good to know. I will never tell you all that you know, I have a girlfriend or whatever, right? Like, you know, like absolutely just, not. Yeah. So I never actually came out as gay. I didn't even actually come out directly to any of them as trans. I just posted about it online and you know, they figured it out.
Yeah. That tends to be the easiest way to go about things. But what I found was that before I was out or like before I knew I was gay, when people would be like, oh my God, Erica, you're gay. And they may have not even meant it in like a derogatory way. They may have meant it in like girly.
Oh.
You like women. Like you have Fifth Harmony posters all over your room. That is not a straight girl thing. I kind of took offense to it where I felt like people were like forcing labels onto me. And I was like, what do these people know about me? And then I ended up coming out like 6 months later. So that's a little awkward. But which is weird. Like, I feel like people just wanted to like give me a heads up. But like, I was so like rejecting of that idea. Like, I refused to acknowledge it. And then
why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think just like naturally, like the human experience, like a lot of things, you just kind of want to come to terms with them yourself.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And like, I think that can go for like all identities where it's just like being told that you're something you're not could be offensive. And I feel like that goes both ways where, you know, if you're straight and people call you gay, it's upsetting. Mm-hmm. And it goes for like if you're trans and people refuse to acknowledge like your gender that you identify as, it's also frustrating. So I think it's just like the mental state of where you are in your own journey, you know?
I think it's really salient. I mean, the core of what you're saying is like, let people tell you who they are and don't tell them who they are.
And it's such a simple matter, but it's something that so many people just don't understand.
Yeah. What's making me think of actually, so I'm curious if you have this experience as well. So my mom is Korean. I believe your mom is Japanese. Mm-hmm. And then my other parent is white and your other parent, I believe, was also white.
Yes.
And so that combo has always actually, before even queerness and gender, has presented a like, what are you question. And even people telling me that I'm not who I am. Like I've had people, I've been like, oh, I'm Korean, or I'm like, you know, I'm Asian. And they're like, no, you're not. Like people like literally argue with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's curious if you had this, like the same experience.
Yeah. And I think I don't look very Asian compared to like my mom or my little sister. Mm-hmm. I'm very more like white passing, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And people think I'm like Hispanic, all sorts of things before Japanese. And so
I get Filipino a lot.
Oh, I get that every once in a while too. And so when people are like, for example, when I test out of like my foreign language credits, they're like, what are you going to do for your foreign language? I'm like, oh, I'm just going to test out. And they're like, what are you using to test out? I'm like, I'm fluent in Japanese. And they're like, no, you're not. And I'm like, no, grew up, you know, I spent school in Japan a couple of years. Like, I definitely am, you know.
That's cool. This is totally tangent, but that's so cool that you were able then to go to the Tokyo Olympics specifically.
Yeah, yeah.
What a cool experience.
It's a bummer that it was no audience. So like my family wasn't able to go.
Oh, yeah. Dang, I forgot about that. COVID, come on.
I know. But no, it was good. They actually, Team USA really pulled through for me. And there's a special like media room, which is like at a hotel where you go to. And they were able to get me in a media room where they allowed my family to go into.
Oh,
so
nice.
I got to hang out with like my aunts and my uncles and my cousins for a little bit.
So they did come to Japan to watch you, but they like didn't.
Yeah, well, they live like literally an hour outside of Tokyo.
Oh, okay.
Like you hop on the train and you're there.
Gotcha. Yeah. Does your mom live there too?
My mom lives in Vegas still, but she refuses to get American citizenship. So she's holding on to that green card and the Japanese citizenship for dear life. She's been here for like, I mean, I'm 22, 25 years maybe now.
Oh, yeah.
And she's still refusing to be an American citizen. She's like, no, Japanese all the way.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Honestly, good for her.
I feel like that's like the stubbornness of an Asian mom really pulling through at its finest.
I mean, I respect that. My mom renounced her Korean citizenship and I think wishes she hadn't.
A lot of, yeah. I mean, like, especially, I mean, like a prime time is like when COVID was starting.
Yeah.
And like Asian hate was really, really bad.
Yeah.
I just remember being like, you can like go home right now because she's a citizen and they would let her back in. And like, yeah, like things just get really, really bad for minorities here. It depends on whatever the political climate is and like what minority is getting targeted at a certain time.
But. Exactly. Yeah. No, the pandemic has been really hard on a lot of Asian Americans I know, especially our elders, which is like the most grotesque part of it for me.
Really sad. Yeah. Really sad and like scary. And yeah, it was just crazy. I just remember like peak COVID. I just remember my mom going to a grocery store and I was like, because my mom is dating a white man right now. His name is Matt. Love Matt. And we're like, you need to go to the grocery store with Matt. Like, right. God forbid something happens.
Right, yeah.
And it's sad because a lot of those Asian people are like not particularly built like, you know what I mean? They're usually 5'2 and really, really frail and small.
Especially if they're old. Yeah. Like, old people are frail and small.
Yeah. And so like the fact that they're getting targeted, it just seems like really, really violent to me and just like unnecessary violence.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I think as you know, the work I do is all in social justice. And so I feel like constantly reading or watching like some sort of trauma porn, if you will. And you know, all the violence is like so unnecessary. And then I think we just add, like, there's just so many added layers of vulnerability where it's like, really, you're going that far, right? Mm-hmm. Old Asian people, like our grandparents, and then now like trans children, right? Mm-hmm. And just like really vulnerable populations where it's like, What is the point here, folks? Yeah. Right. So I'm curious, kind of going back to my first question in terms of discovering your own sexuality and coming out about that and being vulnerable with the world about it. Do you remember like the feel, like, were you nervous? I'm just curious, and you can share whatever you feel comfortable sharing, but were you nervous when you came out? How was the response? Like, how was that experience?
Yeah, I guess it depends on who I came out to. Like, I did, you know, I feel like bisexual people really struggle with where they stand in a community because like gay people kind of use it as a stepping stone.
Sure.
And I will admit it, I used it as a stepping stone. Sure. I came out as bi when I was 16, partway through 16, and came out to my friends. And for some of them, that's all I shared, and I never dated a man again. Mm-hmm. And the label change just really wasn't worth explaining.
Sure.
And my mom, I told her I was bi when my dad was going through his sickness, and he ended up passing a couple months later, and they put me in therapy just because, you know, you're a 16-year-old, your dad kind of suddenly dies. And I kind of needed like help with the grieving process.
So therapy was for the grieving, not for being queer.
No. Okay. Yeah. And then
just to clarify.
Yeah. And then I tell my therapist, I'm like super open about it. And he's like, is there anything I should know? And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm gay. And he's like, okay. And then in the first session, my mom is supposed to like sit in on the meeting to like hit notes. And he's like, it's like, how much, and he's just kind of going over like the checklist of things that he's supposed to get into. And I just kind of like told him I was gay. And he was like, are you really private about that? I was like, no, not really. So then he goes down the list and is like, okay, so like how much of your like gayness do you like feel comfortable with? And my mom is sitting at the table and like never heard me identify as gay. And she was just like, oh, this is the thing now. And then I think she just kind of like rolled with the punches. And I was like, yeah. Oh,
good for her.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, cool. And then, so that was that. My other people, let's see. I feel like publicly, I didn't really post about being like openly gay very long time. I feel like there's two different experiences in the gay community. One is like you identify as straight and you meet like a person in your real life who you want to date. And it's like, oh, I think I'm gay now. Mm-hmm. And there's the other side of things where you know you're gay, but you don't date anyone for years on end. And that was my experience where I was just like reading fan fiction and just watching like TV show ships. So like, it was a little, a different kind of like gay. So like I never really, there was nothing to post about. Mm. And even if I did, it was like celebrity crushes. Mm. So people were like, it's really hard to kind of put a label on that because a lot of people don't assume.
Right.
And so.
Or they assume the opposite.
And so my social media coming out was really laid back and I was open about it, but just never really talked about it. Mm. And I don't think people like fully knew I identified as gay until I decommitted from USC. Mm. And in my decommitment post, I talked about like being a gay woman and like that's the reason why I committed there. And people were like, oh, he's gay? And like that was the whole thing.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I appreciate you sharing all that. And especially the way that you were talking about sort of like, you, I think you said earlier, like, I just didn't want to carry the burden of like having to hold it in basically. And I remember that being such a heavy burden for me. Like in high school, when I was not out, I had basically two lives I lived. So at school, I was at a private school where it was sort of separate from swimming. We didn't have, well, we had a swim team, but it was not very good. So I had like, you know, swim team at private school. And then I had my swim team, which was the actual swim team outside of that. And there was no overlap. Like literally nobody went to both places. So at school I was open as a gay person. And like I had a girlfriend at the time. Everybody at school knew that. Like I was very much like, it was like, we were like the gay couple at school. Mm-hmm. And then at swimming, I was like, absolutely not. Like, and I tried so hard to like talk about boys like everybody else did. And
yeah.
Like the locker rooms were really, you know, stressful because of like the culture, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like that's like the burden of it is like, it is exhausting to turn that switch on and off.
Yeah.
And like, you just have to be like conscientious of what you say all the time. And it's like not fun. Like you're constantly in a state of stress.
Yeah.
And like with the awareness I have now at age 22, the ripe age of 22, if you will, like no 16-year-old younger, like 14 to 18 year old should ever have to go through that. Like you're still a kid. What are you doing? Like filtering yourself in a, like a totally different room. You know what I mean? And I get that some people have to do it for safety, but like that is a hard thing to do. And I think for me, I just wasn't willing to do that.
Yeah.
So I just kind of threw it out the window.
I love that. I wish I had that confidence. I mean, I think that's so lovely. And I think it's, what I hear is also, it's like, it's inspiring, I think to others as well, because, you know, I think we don't often take the chance. I think one of the things I work with when I talk with a bunch of queer youth and I mentor a lot of queer youth, and a lot of it is, yes, there is actual danger for us, of course. Mm-hmm. And I never want to dismiss that, but we also imagine a lot of potential dangers. And I don't mean imagine as in it's false, but I mean, imagine as we are more fearful of the world than sometimes matches our actual experiences. But that makes sense because there is so much, you know, transphobia, queerphobia, and so on. But I actually have to sometimes invite people to say, hey, like sometimes there are risks that we take.
And sometimes people may surprise you. People may react really, really well.
Yeah.
My coach is, I believe he's still pretty, my club coach, he's pretty conservative. Mm-hmm. And I remember being like, that is the one person that I will never come out to until after I leave for college. Mm-hmm. And eventually, you know, as swim teams do, people talk and word gets out. And he sits me down for a meeting and he's like, hey, so I know you're gay. And I just remember like my stomach just like sunk.
That's an interesting way to approach it for him.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he just wanted to have that conversation and just like clear it out of the way. And I was so scared. And then he was like, I love you. I support you. Mm. He's like, I will be making jokes, but it's not in a place to like ridicule you. It's from a place of like, I care about you. Like, I love you. And like, he's like, I'm just a joker. And he's like, and if I like go too far, let me know. Mm. But like, that's just how I express it. And like, I honestly respected that. Like, you know, if he's the one who's joking around and giving people a hard time for like straight couples dating on the team, I kind of want that same response. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, like, don't treat me differently. Just
sort of like a normalization.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I love the jokes where it's like, you know, sometimes he would like see me, like a girl would walk by and like I'll take a double take and he'll be like, oh, there's Erica doing the look again. Like, you know, like I just appreciate stuff like that. And I like think it's really, really funny. And so, you know, he reacted so well. And like, I'd created this narrative in my head that like he would flip out. He wouldn't want to coach me anymore. He'd treat me a different way. And like, it was nothing like that. So I think like, don't get me wrong, sometimes people surprise you in a bad way. But sure. For every one of those, there's also another situation where they react really, really well.
Yeah.
And I think it's a dice roll sometimes.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it is a dice roll. And I think it's about figuring out like what your sort of risk tolerance is. You know what I mean? And I think you named it earlier. And sometimes there are safety concerns where people can't come out in a certain moment or they're going to put themselves in like, you know, obvious risk. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of times it is this like kind of dice roll of like, do I like hold this burden? Is that, or is it easier to let it go and potentially upset other people? Mm-hmm. And one of the things I always think about for myself, especially when I came out as trans, where I knew like I was going to upset people. I knew I was going to lose women swimming, for example, mm-hmm. right? And like not be able to, you know, compete in that category when I chose to swim in the men's category, all the kind of stuff. Like for me, it was about stopping fighting myself. Like it was like, I don't want to fight this battle with myself every day anymore. And I'm going to have to fight battles with other people. Mm-hmm. Like by stopping this battle with myself, I'll fight battles with other people. But I can always leave other people.
Yeah, you know? Definitely. I think it's like a conversation of like, you need to weigh the safety factor of it, but there's also a safety factor in your mental state.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, honestly, like when you hide it for so long, like it really does deteriorate your mental state and it comes out in different ways.
Yeah.
Whether it may be, you know, self-harm in terms of like hurting yourself or, you know, struggling with eating or, just getting like really depressed, like it comes out in different ways. So I think people do need to weigh those opportunities because like worst case scenario, right? Say you're not doing well because you're in the closet and you're like, I have to come out.
Yeah.
And you come out to your parents and they don't react well. Mm-hmm. You will find a new community that will accept you. Mm-hmm. And that's really comforting, I think.
Yeah.
Like people are replaceable.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, really important. Mm. And, you know, I feel like people are scared of like losing a friend group or, you know, losing certain family members. But it's like, you can find a new family. You can find new friends. And in the queer community, like people are bonded by that and people will be there for you. And that's one thing I do love about our community.
Yeah. The power of chosen family, I think, is so much stronger than like, I'll say the general population gives it credit. And I think that has been the most powerful part, like almost like tangible, you know what I mean? Like you can feel the love in the queer community. And I think it's one of the things like, you know, corporate pride is a whole nightmare and we don't need to get into that, but at Pride and at like Pride places, this feeling I have, like I cry at every Pride I go
to. It's so nice. And like, honestly, those experiences don't come from the corporate side of things of like
community.
Make this post or it honestly comes the one good thing about corporate Pride. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt is like when they host like parties or get togethers and they do a good job at inviting people from the community and like you have this moment of like camaraderie together.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, without corporate Pride, those things can't be funded as well as they want it to be.
Sure.
So I'll give them their once a month rainbow profile picture if, you know, you could get a group of great queers together and give us a good time.
Funding is hard. I agree with you. Talking about chosen family, I read a bit about you. You also just mentioned about your dad passing and we don't have to dive into this if you don't feel comfortable, but I'm kind of curious about I've read about how that impacted your mental health and you talked about that. We're talking about mental health here and especially. So I was curious if you could talk a little bit about how you handle mental health, especially with regards to swimming and, you know, integrating queerness as well. Cause it sounds like you came out and then your dad passed and then you're also an athlete. And I mean, I haven't had the experience of a parent passing, but I have had the experience of coming out swimming and just a lot going on and mental health was so bad for me at the time. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious if you could talk a bit about that.
It was like chaos. Like it was like, I feel like in the moment it was fine because I had to survive through it. But with the awareness I have now, I'm like, oh my God, that was crazy.
Yeah.
And
so much going on.
Yeah. And honestly, I took it like a champ. Like I was in a state of like head empty, just go, like very robotic. And it worked for a little bit. I made the national team for the first time 3 weeks after my dad died. Wow. I was named captain of Junior Worlds, huge deal. And I feel like I need to add, junior world captain without telling people my dad died. I feel like usually that's a way to get, it could be a way to garner some votes, but I did not mention that my dad died. And I was pretty much on autopilot for the next couple months. And then I started my senior year of high school. Mm-hmm. And then, you know how when you start to get into a schedule, your emotions really start to kick in. So I started to hit like end of my first semester of senior year. And yeah, that's when I started to get like really, really sad, but not like emotional sad, like numb to the world, where I just kind of come back, take naps,
kind of checking out a bit.
Yeah, be really reckless with my emotions. Just like AWOL, talking to like meeting a girls on Tumblr and like not necessarily the safest way.
I see.
And couldn't finish practices anymore because like the inner dialogue in my head just started getting really bad. And I remember like it got to the point where I would crave really like mentally challenging practices because then I would have to focus on the set and I wouldn't have to think about the mental state. But like my coach would hit us with like a recovery practice where we had like an easy kick set and I wouldn't be able to finish it. And he was like, what is going on? Like, it's not physical.
Yeah.
Like, she can do all the hard sets I hit at her. Why are the easy ones where she's struggling?
Yeah.
And I think I told him, I was like, the voices in my head don't stop. And I think that made him freak out. And then literally like a week later, I was in therapy. And honestly, kudos to USA Swimming and USOPC because they connected me with a therapist who worked at UNLV like instantly, who was willing to do it like pro bono. Because we also just lost a majority of our income. And so it took a while and it got worse before it got better. I feel like most therapy is that way.
Yeah. Well, you start digging at the wound.
Yeah. And it has to come up. And I remember I had a swim meet like partway through this healing process and I swam atrociously. It was so bad. I remember my coach pulled me out and was like, he's like, I don't want to rush your healing process, but like, I feel like I need to tell you this from a place of care. But like, if you don't get better, like you're not racing anymore. Like, you are not in a place to race right now. And I remember that kind of like jolted me awake. And I was like, oh God, like, I really need to start like healing rather than kind of like excavating the wound. And I think that's what really did it and kind of really picked it up after that. But I think it's just like, since so many things were happening at once, I kind of had to be able to mentally separate it and untangle it first and then kind of like go through each process and heal. Yeah, because like my coming out was associated with my dad dying, which is not a fun process to go through. So I think being able to separate that and was like, okay, you know, your dad died when you were 16 years old. That's an age where a lot of people start to have their, you know, sexual awakening, if you will. And so it was just the timing that was unfortunate. They don't, those experiences don't coincide with each other. And I feel like that's a really important thing to remember.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I mean, I think that I was sort of just considering also the concept of like chosen family, the concept of identity. Like, you know, 16 years old is when so much identity is forming and sort of like, I mean, I think sometimes you're learning things you already knew about yourself, but you're like really
coming to terms.
Sort of consciousizing them, if you will.
And I feel like that those formative teen years are such an interesting age because like you do have the education. You do know who gay people are. You know, how safe sex works. And
let's hope.
I really hope.
I mean, there's a lot of places in the country right now that are banning the education for that. But yes, in theory,
Should. But in theory, most people are educated on the matter. And it's that point where it's more so of an identity thing of like, do you know yourself well enough to identify with those terms? Like, safe sex, it's like, am I smart enough to make a better decision for my future? Or, you know, your sexuality, you're like, I know these people exist. Am I self-aware enough to know that that's who I belong with? And so I feel like sometimes we don't give credit for like teenagers and how intelligent they are. They just lack the emotional intelligence and their own sense of self.
Well, one of the things I think about, especially with teens, is that, and this we can sort of like feather in about trans people as well, which is that I think that kids actually know a lot about who they are. They just aren't given the agency, first of all, to say, this is who I am, mm-hmm. especially trans youth. And the second thing is that they're also taught who they're supposed to be. And that can cloud a lot of it, at least in my experience. Like, yeah. I feel like very early on, I knew that I was queer. But I also very quickly learned that I wasn't supposed to be, you know? And yeah. I think I tried really hard to be what I wasn't supposed to be until I found the courage, the agency, the like community, honestly, to say like, actually, this is me.
And I also think like another thing is like, I mean, it's definitely different now, but like there was a time when the media that they like showed about queer people was very different. And it seemed Absolutely. Very like typecasted. Like I was like, I'm not a lesbian. I don't look like Ellen. You know what I mean?
I can't tell you how many people I've heard say something like
that. Yeah, it's like, I'm not gay. I'm definitely not attracted to Ellen. And it's hard because it's like, I just didn't know that like femme lesbians existed either. Mm. And like, I guess I knew that bi people existed. But for me, it was like, how many of them actually want to date a woman? Because like the people I was around at the time was like, I'm bi, but I would never date a woman.
Interesting.
But yeah. I think that just comes with high school and people just kind of saying that to where they want to fit in. Or, you know, not ostracize themselves completely. But I think it took me seeing a lot of like YouTuber couples. Mm-hmm. And there's this one or two actually, Shannon and Cammy and Rose and Rosie. And they were just like two femme lesbians. And I was like, oh my God, that is a dream life. Like I could do that. And I think it just kind of like clicked for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's just a lot of that. Yeah, like your self-acceptance and where you want to fit in the world. And honestly, like showing people that those people exist and that like you're not actually alone and you're not crazy and the average person does not look like Ellen.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, I think that, and that's why I think your like story visibility is so powerful. Because it shows kids that they can be exactly who they are. And mm-hmm. I was so convinced when I was a kid that I had to choose between, not even trans is involved, right? Choose between being openly gay and like being a swimmer. Like mm-hmm. I was like, I can't do both. I have no idea how to do both. And I spent so much time like in the middle of the night Googling like gay women swimmers, gay swimmers. And like the only thing that came up was like Tom Daly,
which yeah,
not
yeah,
even yeah. in the women's category and not a swimmer.
Yeah.
You know, I think Ian Thorpe came up a couple times and I was like, this is not helpful. Too,
yeah.
Yeah. He came out after, so that, but also when I Googled that, I was like, that's not women swimming. Like yeah. I really like was sure that I would have to like keep my sexuality under wraps. And I think like I wish that I had seen you before, like, and that our ages are switched because you're younger than me, but I think, and I'm sure you know this and probably get messages about, you know, young folks seeing you and saying, oh, I can be me and swim. Mm-hmm. Do you get messages like that?
Yeah. I also get like ones where it's like, you inspired me to come out. And like, that blows my mind. But like, that'll never be not a big deal to me. Like, oh my God, like me being who I am is the reason why someone has the confidence to tell people like, oh, I'm gay, but I'm also going to be a good swimmer. Like I want to make the Olympic team.
Yeah.
And that's insane to me. Yeah. Like that'll never not be crazy.
Yeah. What does it make you like feel? I mean, if you can dig into it a little.
I don't think I really have like words for that yet. Like, I guess I forget how much power I have because I feel like athletes are so different to where they're not. I feel like, yes, my life is publicized, but it's definitely publicized behind a screen of just sports and swimming. Right. And at the end of the day, you know, I train every day and I'm not necessarily recognizable. Like I could go through a Chick-fil-A drive-thru and no one's going to know who I am. But I feel like when I do get those messages, it's a really quick way to realize the power and the change that I'm able to make. And sometimes I'm unbelievably grateful for it and it like blows my mind. But sometimes like I get a little nervous of like, am I doing enough good in the world to kind of like be a good example for these people? And, you know, like I met someone who was going through a gender identity crisis where they didn't know whether they were gay, trans, or non-binary and like where they stood on the spectrum. And I remember like I kind of took that as an internal pressure of like, am I doing enough to make the world / swim community a better place so people like that can do well in it? You know what I mean? And I feel like with that kind of responsibility, like comes pressure sometimes.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Most of the time it's like, oh my God, grateful. Thank you so much. But other times it's like, oh my God, like I really want to change the culture of swimming to where it's a little more accepted.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think you're doing a lot for that. And I think, you know, I have two thoughts. And the first is that I think, you know, a lot of athletes get thrust into this public figure life where like all they want to do is swim or whatever sport they play. And then suddenly they're also asked to speak on all these social issues. And I think about that a lot with public figures, like, you know, athletes specifically, and then musicians as well, where like, yeah, some people have a message for the world, but some people just want to play the guitar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think there's a lot of pressure there.
And I also think you can be passionate about something without being like the beacon of light for it.
Sure.
Like sometimes when people ask me about like trans right activism, stuff like that, and like women in sports.
Mm-hmm. I will ask you about that.
Yes, yes, yes. But sometimes I feel like I'm like, I feel like you should ask someone else. Mm. I feel like I am not the first person to speak on this. And it's one thing to ask me for my opinion, but when people ask me for like
expertise,
facts and like facts of the matter and research, I'm like, I barely graduated high school. I am not the person to ask. Like, I just swim fast, you know? And so it's a little, I feel like people kind of think like my opinions and my being vocal on certain matters, they kind of take that as like, I'm an expert on it.
Right.
Which is a little scary.
Yeah. It's a sort of a mismatch responsibility. Yeah. I think that's what I was trying to say is like some, like your expertise is in swimming.
Yeah.
And a specific kind of swimming too, right? Yeah. Distance swimming. And I think that, I think that's something that, especially when we talk, you know, we're drifting into women in sports and such, people are often asking people about who's qualified to be in the women's category. Yeah. They're asking people who have like no qualifications to say that. Mm-hmm. So I am curious though, you were talking about, do you think you're doing enough sort of good in the world, especially for swimming? And I personally think that you're doing a lot of good in the world. And I think, you know, your power of just being openly gay, openly queer, and speaking in support of trans people as well, sort of the greater LGBTQ plus community, I think is incredibly powerful. And it has been to me personally, just to witness you. And you've been very outspoken specifically about like Leah, and Leah Thomas's inclusion in sports. You raced her last year. And so I'm curious, I know you've spoken about it before, but I'm curious if you could talk a little about that experience, specifically like why you chose to be so openly in support of Leah.
Yeah. I will say, as much as I love the queer community, the one thing that I think certain people lack, especially if they're privileged of being, you know, a white cisgender lesbian or a white cisgender gay man, is that they kind of expect the community to be there for them, but they're not there for everyone else in the community. And it's really sad. Like, I feel like I was so fortunate in having so many people, you know, be open to me and accept me with open arms and be there for me. And I feel like with that, it gives you a certain responsibility to be there for other queer people, regardless of their identity. Like, I don't know what Leah went through with the, you know, gender dysphoria. I've never experienced that. But I know what it's like to feel stuck, you know, being like, am I gay? Am I that? Mm-hmm. And I totally understand that. And it's like, at least I don't wake up every day and be like, I hate the way I look. I'm not in the body that I'm supposed to be. For me, I was just like, I like women and I don't know what to do with it. And it's like, so obviously it's a mutual respect thing where it's like, people were there for me. I need to be there for other people. And
I think even like the mental health thing, you know, you've experienced mental health struggles and, you know, so has Leah, so have most trans people because of the amount of transphobia we experience and the gender dysphoria some of us experience.
And it's just like, be there for people. Like, I feel like that's the bare minimum. Like, don't be rude about it. Don't be the reason why someone goes to bed and is like, I hate myself. That is a terrible thing to do. You know what I mean? So I think my initial like support for Leah came from like, let's be a decent human being, which is the bare minimum, but unfortunately so many people lack it.
Right.
And then it kind of turned into, you know, will I do this for it? Will I, you know, talk about this? And from then it just kind of escalated. And I think I was like, okay, not enough people are talking about this, which is why they're coming to me.
Right.
And I think I just have to take that responsibility with arms.
Yeah. And I'm so glad you did. I mean, I think we have had I'm going to say surprising to the average, you know, to average person in the public. I think it is surprising. We've had a good amount of women Olympians and, you know, prominent women swimmers actually, you know, support Leah. And we even had a big letter that you helped me actually send around as well, with only, you know, professional and high, you know, NCAA D1 level women swimmers saying like, hey, we support this. But people aren't, I think people are afraid to speak about it. I think people are afraid to show their support because of the amount of transphobia that permeates and, you know, spills over onto our allies as well. Yeah. So have you experienced any of that? And if so, how have you dealt with it?
Yeah. Last year at NC2As was an experience that I know I will never live through again. And some of this was my responsibility. I probably should have thought it through. But like I said, didn't think it through. And I paid the price. So Leah's on the podium. Teammate, my Olympic teammate, Emma Wyatt gets second. I get third. My other teammate, Brooke Forty, gets fourth. And to put into context, us three were in within a little squad in Tokyo.
Right,
we called
right.
ourselves the Poon Squad. And I'm letting people in on this Olympic inside joke here. But we had a training camp in Hawaii and it was like Punahou High School. Mm-hmm. And there was stuff on their walls that say Go Poons. Mm-hmm. And we just thought it was the funniest thing ever. Gotcha. And so we're like, we're the Poon Squad. Mm-hmm. And it was all of my Olympic roommates and Brooke. So pretty much the age range of like current college students on the women's
right.
team.
Right.
And we, you know, being at the Olympics for a month and a half, you kind of get like really closely bonded.
Yeah. It's a very special experience yeah. that pretty much nobody else has.
Yeah. And I think another thing that we need to add in the culture of swimming is you take podium pictures mm-hmm. and later on you take separate photos with your friends mm-hmm. and they send you the photo and you post on Instagram and you're like, oh, so cute. And so we are on the podium, we take photos for everybody and we take our photo. And then afterwards we take Emma and Brooke and we take a photo together. And that night,
I know the photo you're talking
about. Yes. That night we send the photo and we're like, oh my God, so cute. This is adorable. Now, someone else took a photo of the whole podium. Where Leah is isolated and second, third, and fourth place are making their own podium. And as conservative media loves unresearched news, it got spread. So I'm on Donald Trump Jr.'s Instagram.
Oh, God.
Ben Shapiro, Ted Cruz, to name a few.
All of these very fervent women sports fans, of course,
oh,
right?
Yeah,
they care
yeah.
so deeply about women's sports.
This year, they were so vocal about NC2As, weren't they?
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. I haven't heard a single peep from any of these people about women.
I'm like, thank
yeah.
you guys.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, and so it's blowing up.
Right.
And I opened Twitter and my op-ed wasn't released yet.
Mm-hmm.
So
right,
they released the op-ed the day after the Five Free.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So now conservatives who haven't done research and even know I'm gay are like, Erica, we love you. You're so open. And then gay people are like,
oh
how
God.
Dare you go turn your back on our community? So my own community hated
God.
Me for a minute.
Oh my God.
And then the op-ed comes out, right? And it's like someone just flipped a switch.
Yeah.
And then suddenly all the gay people who hated me the day before
yeah.
and queer people who hated me the day before are like, thank you so much. You're such a beacon. And then the conservatives are like, how dare you? You're
right,
horrible,
right.
this and that.
Probably called you homophobic.
Oh yeah. And then I just remember the end of the meet. We have a group chat with just me, Brooke, and Emma. And I want to say Brooke texts in the group chat. She goes, well, that photo wasn't our best idea.
Oh, Brooke
like,
is such a sweetie. Oh, I talked to her recently.
I love Brooke. And we were like, yeah, but that wasn't the best. And then this year, Emma and I were in the ready room again for the 500. Mm-hmm. We cracked a little joke and we're like, maybe we shouldn't take podium pictures together this year. Maybe not the best idea.
Of course, the conservative media wouldn't care at all because they're not watching
no.
because Leah's not there.
They wouldn't even notice, but we had a little moment of trauma yeah. where we were like, maybe not the best idea.
Yeah, yeah. I remember watching that. So I was there and
yeah.
I watched you all swim.
Yeah.
You all did incredibly.
Thank
and,
you.
It was such an exciting race. And yeah, especially because you were like right on Leah for so much of it. It
yeah.
was really great. But I remember, you know, after you finished the race, you gave Leah a big hug.
Yeah.
And there's a photo of that too. So we have proof.
We do. And yet no one is talking about
no.
that photo.
And I remember watching the podium and I also remember you taking the photo and I knew in my head, I was like, okay, so they're Olympic teammates. Like
yeah.
I knew the backstory. I knew all that. But I was like, I saw the guy taking the photo of everybody and I was like, no,
yeah.
no. Because I knew, because they were done. You all were done.
Yeah.
Like you didn't, nobody, the big cameraman was supposedly done taking a photo. It was just supposed to be like the iPhone camera.
Yeah.
But they took the shot with Leah on her own. And oh my God, my heart broke in that moment because I knew, like, I was prepared. I mean, I live in the press in many different ways. So I was prepared for the next day. And I was like, oh no, like that is not going to be a good photo.
And I don't really look on social media during swim meets, but
you shouldn't.
Yeah, obviously. And someone had texted me and was like, you're on Snapchat News. And I'm like, why am I on Snapchat News? Yeah. And then someone showed me and I was like,
yeah.
Oh no, what has been done?
Yeah. I remember you made a really great post at the end of the season though, where you posted the photo of you and Leah and you posted the photo of you, Emma and Brooke, and you explained and you were like, this is why, you know, and you reiterated your support for Leah. So thank you for sharing that story in the background because I think it's so important because people don't assume that there could be possibly something other, you know,
I think,
behind.
And like, people like saw it and was like, oh, she's handling it so well. But I just remember like waking up and being like, what is going on? Like, it was comical even where I was like, this isn't real.
Yeah.
This is insane.
Yeah. Those 3 months were just like, so, I mean, you and I were texting on and off about getting, you know, a quote from you for something or just asking you to help me with helping support Leah. And, you know, I was also, you know, helping Leah a lot during that time and dealing with media for her. We were working on what media she wanted to do. And it was like, I mean, I don't want to share her story for her, but it was a tough time.
It was exhausting.
Yeah. And it's tough for everybody involved.
Yeah. It was crazy for those few months. And like, even after the fact,
it continued. Honestly, it stills now. She's still in the media.
Yeah. It was worse after the damage had been done, so
quote
to speak.
Unquote.
Quote unquote. Like, you know, Leah won, and in a time where with NC2A women swimming, you're usually in the limelight for around 2 days and then people forget because it's swimming. But with this, it just kept on going and it didn't stop. And I just remember like people would send me letters being like, you know, you're the second place finisher in our hearts, or like people would, I'd do an autograph session and people would want my signature and be like, you are second place to me. And like, that just sucks.
Yeah.
And it just like changes your mood like that. And
tell me more like about why it sort of like sucks in that moment. Because just for anybody who doesn't understand, because Leah won, they like said Emma Wyant was, that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, Emma Wyant.
Okay. So they said that Emma Wyant was like the true winner.
Yeah.
And, you know, the governor of Florida was saying that this is because he cares so much about women. So and then they said you were, you know, true second place. Basically, a lot of people sort of wanted to rewrite the championship, taking Leah out of it. And you're saying that hearing that and being called the second place finisher instead of the third place felt really crappy.
Yeah, like it sucks because it kind of like, it takes away the accomplishment of what you achieved. You know what I mean? Like,
of what Leah achieved.
What Leah achieved, but also what we achieved. Like, like, don't get me wrong, like third place at NC2A's is no small feat. And it's like, oh, you actually got second. It's like, no, I didn't. Like, why are you, what's wrong with third? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, no, doesn't that suck? Like, like, don't get me wrong. Like,
sort of like a consolation, a pat on the back.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's another reason why, like, before that whole stuff, like, it was upsetting me because it was like so many people would be like, how would you feel if Leah beats you? And it's like, I'd be pissed, but not because Leah is trans. It's because I don't want to lose. I was like, you know what I mean? It's like, give me some benefit of the doubt here. And
well, you're an athlete. You don't want to lose.
Right? Exactly. And I think that's what makes athletes athletes.
Right.
And so,
that's also what makes sport sport. I mean, this is the thing that I always get lost on. People are like, oh, but like, you know, Leah or another trans woman is going to steal a spot. And I'm like, anytime anybody beats somebody else, they are beating somebody else. That is the number one point of sports,
is to beat somebody else. Yeah.
And then therefore take a spot from somebody
else. Yeah, exactly. And it's like, if Leah was at NC2A's again this year and swam the 5-3, I would want to beat her just as much as I want to beat the other seven in my heat. You know what I mean? Like, it's nothing personal. It's just the competitive nature of the way swimming works.
Yeah.
And so when they were like, you were true second, it's like, no, I wasn't. I was third. And let's appreciate the fact that I did get third.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so like, that was a little upsetting. Kind of hurt my feelings a little bit.
Yeah. And that makes all the sense.
Yeah. And it also kind of sucks when people who recognize you for that race isn't the people who actually care about women's sports, just like we came here. So people are like, oh, you were in the final heat of the 500. They kind of forget that I also won a silver medal in Tokyo the year before. And because usually if it's like people who really do care about women's sports, it's like, oh, you're an Olympic silver medalist. But when it's people who recognize me from that race, it's
You're the one who Leah beat.
In my experience, it's not the best experience. It's not the good situation.
Yeah. I mean, I think what you're talking about is a greater picture of women swimming. Actually, just let's talk about actually the country, right? It's a picture of where the country's at about women's sports, and in this case, women's swimming, mm-hmm. That is so focused on actually not women swimming, nor women swimming. They're focused on specifically like one person, mm-hmm. right? One woman.
Literally.
Leah, in this case.
Yeah.
Or the concept of Leah, because they don't actually humanize her.
No.
And I like, it's so fascinating because I've been doing this work for a long time. And since Leah's been competing, everybody suddenly cares about women's sports who never, like, they don't watch the WNBA. They weren't like arguing for equal pay for women's US soccer. Like they'd have never watched women's swimming before.
No, and it's like, it's those people where this year we had NC2As again. Leah doesn't have any more college eligibility left, so she wasn't there.
Right.
And it's cricket. No one's there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
there were no protesting for women's sports.
No protesting. And
fascinating.
Yeah. And it's just like, I also know they're not showing up to our swim meet. I know, because it's free admission and we're still not filling out crowds.
Yeah.
And yeah, like it really does irk me because like women's swimming, like we struggle to get funding outside of the Olympic year. Yeah.
But people pay thousands of dollars to fly from the UK, Canada, and the rest of the country to protest Leah.
Yeah. Like, oh, if you support it, support to the USA Swimming Foundation so I could get funded. Thank you very much. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
well, there's so many barriers for women swimming. So I recently read a statistic that it's not women swimming specifically, it's women's sports, that most of the colleges in the country, most of the NCAA membership doesn't meet Title IX qualifications. What does that mean, right, for the average listener? That means that they're actually not funding women's sports at colleges around the country. And like some 70-something percent don't meet Title IX. Isn't that crazy?
That's insane.
And people are spending money on 400 anti-trans bills trying to ban kids from playing sports, right? Like, it's such a, you know, you and I have both competed in women's swimming, you for longer than me, but in like there's the issues, the barriers in women's sports are not trans people. There's like two of us.
Literally.
actually, there's zero of us right now competing in NCAA.
Yeah, and that's why when people are like, some people, their argument is like, make their own category. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you going to do? Have a swim off?
or just literally a time trial. It's like one person.
Literally. I'm like, how many trans people do you think are in the sport of swimming? I'm like, there's not that many people in the sport of swimming.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have pro series where there's three heats of each people. You know what I mean?
Like, so three times eight, right?
Just literally 24 people in an event. Like, yeah. I don't know. It just, people who care about sports culture, who literally watch college football and March Madness, it just irks me in a way that no one will understand. And when the trans movement start, or the trans woman in sport movement started for the Conservative Party and they suddenly cared, like,
It really is about like policing women's bodies. It's about making sure that only a certain kind of woman gets admitted into women's sports. And it also harkens back to like how women's sports even started, which was the inclusion of what kind of woman? White women.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And I think people miss that too, because a lot of Black women, a lot of brown women are also accused of not being woman enough and being too manly. And I know that happens even with cis women, right? Like I can't tell you how many times I've read some report about Katie Ledecky being manly and being accused of being trans. Even like tweets about Leah Thomas were showing pictures of Katie.
Yeah, they were.
And I was like, oh my God, y'all, that is a cisgender woman. Yeah. Like, you think you're making a point here.
She's just swole AF.
And like, fast.
Yeah. And last semester I took a woman in sports media class.
Hmm. Was it all about Leah?
You know, we hit on trans athletes, but Leah was not mentioned, which probably would have given me wonderful points in the class. But surprising, not all about Leah.
Yeah.
But,
there's more about women's sports than just trans women.
Who would have thought? But it did talk about, you know, back in the day when Black women were allowed to compete, they were also the same thing of like, they are going to ruin women's sports.
Yep. It's exactly the same argument.
Yeah,
if you go and look at the headlines from 1960 and then you look at it now, they are no different. Yeah.
And
even the separate but equal.
With time, they were incorporated into the sport. And then the same thing happened with gay women, with like Billie Jean King and her tennis matches. She came out as a lesbian, lost all her sponsorships, and people thought that she was taking over women's tennis and it was never going to be the same. Mm. And women's tennis recovered and then
and also got better because Billie Jean King is
an icon.
Yeah, exactly.
And we love her now. And right now we're just facing the trans movement, and maybe I'm optimistic, but I would like to think that in the same amount of time that those movements took for those sports, it'll eventually become accepting for trans people.
Yeah.
And I'm trying, whenever these arguments happen and certain swimmers who are very against Leah talk about trans rights and honestly misgendering and not even like respecting pronouns in any way, shape, or form.
Or like bodily autonomy or something. I mean, so many, there's one swimmer that I know you're talking about that has been very, very rude towards Leah and just talking about Leah's genitals constantly, which is just obscene.
So disrespectful. I tell myself I'm not going to go on Twitter and be a nuisance to society. I am just going to look at the bigger picture and just hope that one day, you know, the work that we're doing now and hopefully it'll evolve over time and, you know, the Billie Jean Kings of the trans community can one day make their impact. And, you know, it's unfortunate
that respected.
Leah was the first one and she's getting all this flack for it. But hopefully one day someone else comes along and it's not as bad.
Yeah. I mean, I think we will get there. I just think it's doing the whole gets worse before it gets better thing.
Yeah.
But I'm curious what you, we don't have to say, you know, name names because I'm not about, you know, just attacking people, but there are, I know that you know this is the people I'm talking about, specific people who have been very outspoken, not in support of Leah and some, you know, more transphobic than others. I mean, all of it's transphobic, but some more blatantly horrible than others. And I'm curious if you were able to sit with them, what would you say and how would you invite them into, like how, I guess, yeah, what would you say to them? Like the people say that, you know, I don't know, Leah's shouldn't
be
in.
It's a hard line. I think it depends on the mood you get me in sometimes.
Let's take like a the most gentle version and then the sassiest version.
One of them would just be like not even giving them the time of day and like saying horrible things that I cannot repeat on this podcast.
And
just being like, if you ever want to have a Jake Paul Tom Fury moment. Do you know who that is?
No, I don't. There's, I'm sorry.
There's like two like YouTube fighters that like have a little like MMA match.
Gotcha.
And they just have like a little boxing duel.
Yep.
I'm like, if you want to get scrappy with it, here's the time and place. I'm down to have a little battle here. But other times I just want to ask questions and just be like, why are you the way, like, why do you feel the need to like genuinely tear down a person? And you know, a lot of those people who support those arguments kind of tie God and religion into it, and I'm personally not religious, but I did grow up in a Lutheran school for all my middle school years, and I just remember being taught like human kindness is the most important thing, love your neighbor like you love yourself. And it's just like, are we reading the same book? You know what I mean? And it makes me sad. Like, I'm just like, why do you feel the need to make someone's life like horrible? You know?
I was really struck by a line you said earlier that's reminding me right now. You said something like don't be the reason somebody goes to bed and hates themselves at night. And I think that if we all could like consider that when we walk through the world and like, do I really want to say this, or do I want to be the person that makes this person's life miserable? I just read about a study by MIT that said, if somebody says something negative to you, somebody else, you have to be told 17 times a positive thing, right? Like, so they walk down the street and somebody says something horrible. You need 17 more positive things to sort of cancel that out. And I was watching some guy talk about this study and he was like, what person do you want to be? Do you want to be one of those 17 people that says something positive? Or do you want to be that one person saying that thing that is really gonna wreck this person for like, you know, for years perhaps, you
and
know?
Like in terms of swimming and like college sport, like you would never tell a teammate like you're fat, you're ugly. You know what I mean? Like you suck. Like you would never tell a teammate that. And or it's just like, you don't belong here. Like you would never tell a teammate that, at least like on our team, that would not fly.
Well, what do you make of the fact that supposedly, I say supposedly because it was anonymous, but supposedly a handful, almost 20, I think it was 18, 16, several of Leah's teammates, but more than half her team, apparently signed a letter saying they don't believe that she belongs in women's sports. What do you sort of make about that? You're talking about your team would never, you know?
Yeah, I think it's, like, in terms of team culture, that is not the way to go about things, you know? You know, we're a number two ranked team, and I am a firm believer that there is a reason why we're a number two ranked team. And it's not because we're all amazing at swimming, even though
you are.
We are. But it's because, you know, we're amazing at swimming because we push each other in the best way possible every day. We work so hard and we love each other because we work hard.
Yeah.
There's no environment like ours, and I'm a firm believer in that. And if, you know, one of our teammates, they ended up coming out as non-binary, we took that into stride and that was it. I mean, of course, non-binary people tend to have more acceptance than trans people. Mm. But we made sure that they felt loved and included in the team and was treated no different. I think that should be a standard in sports because that's what sports are. And that's the part that I love about sports. Mm. But unfortunately, you don't find that everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I read about that letter, it was just like, that was like gut wrenching. There was a lot of horrible things that, you know, as we've talked about at the time for Leah, you know, just horrible headlines and horrible news sources. But then when I read the thing about her teammates, I was like, how do you get up the next morning and go to practice? Like, how do you get up at 5:30 or 4:30, whatever time your morning practice is, and like walk to practice, get in a pool? You're already like exposed to some degree in a swimsuit as well. It's just like, there's so much already vulnerability there. Yeah. You're early, you're hopping into the swimming pool. And the only reason you're really getting there is A, because you like to swim, and B, because you have people to do it with. But now those people don't want you there, and you don't even know which 18 of them it is. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that was just that, like that dug into me. Having had my own experience with teammates who didn't want me there, but knowing who they were. So at least I knew who to avoid. can you imagine that? Like,
no, it's awful. And like, I mean, like Leah didn't have the fortune to do this, but like, I mean, like I would probably make a joke of like transfer portal immediately. You know what I mean? Like, oh man. NC2A would be getting a phone call and I'd be filling out that paperwork real quick.
Dang, yeah. We'll start to wrap up here, but I've so appreciated the allyship you've shown to Leah. And I think to me, what I hear is that it comes from such a deep, like humanity piece that like, it's not about Leah's transness. It's not about like her, even her athleticism. It sounds like it's about, I mean, she's a great athlete as well, but
it's like sports end. I mean, like, you know, you're not a swimmer forever. I'm not a swimmer forever. And like, at the end of the day, like, we are people forever.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. Like, is Leah great at swimming? Yes. Am I good at swimming? Yes. But, like, who cares? No one cares 10 years from now. Like, I'm not going to walk into an office and be like, I deserve this because I'm an Olympic silver medalist. Mm-hmm. I deserve this because I swim fast. Nobody cares. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important to hold on to.
Well, and even if they – I mean, I think – I don't want to downplay your success. Like, I think you will always be an Olympian, and that will always be really amazing.
Thank you.
And I think you should hold on to that. And if that means walking to an office saying, you know, give me this because I'm an Olympian, okay, you should do that, right? Use it. You worked hard for that. And I think, like, humanity should transcend, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And I think, like, what I'm hearing is, you know, I believe sports are a human right. I think what at the core of sports, what do we have? Bodily autonomy, right?
Yeah.
Bodily agency. And when we deprive trans children, especially of that, and then trans women generally, and trans people generally, we're depriving people of access to their bodies.
Definitely, definitely. And it's sad. Like, I feel like I do say, like, at the end of my swim career, no one's gonna care that I was a swimmer. But it's like, what sports brought to me is just so much more. It's a community, it's self-confidence, so many lessons that I can get into a whole other time. But like, depriving trans kids of that, like, that is so sad. And not even on like a collegiate level, but like,
we're talking about children.
K through 12.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, I loved nothing more as a first grader kicking a soccer ball up and down. And you know, it's just, I don't know, it's just upsetting.
Yeah, that part's the part that obsessed me, you know, a lot. And we've spent a lot of time talking about Leah today and you know, trans women in sports, generally speaking. And at the same time, like, one, I want to note that we focus on Leah because there's really not that many other people to focus on.
Yeah.
So that's, people need to remember that. This whole trans women domination, like, there is not a lot of them.
One example.
there's a handful of examples, but the one that people, there's only one people know.
Yeah.
But what really this country is talking about is they're using, you know, the 1, 2, 5, whatever trans women in elite level sports, and then they're making rules about children.
Yeah.
And like, most of the time, even the children, there's not that many. Like, the Utah governor last year was saying why he vetoed a trans athlete bill that unfortunately the House then, or the government in Utah overrode. But he said, you know why I'm saying this and I'm vetoing this bill is there's one trans person on a girls team in high school. There are 75,000 athletes in Utah. high school athletes, and one is in a one tr- is person who's trans in girls sports.
They said, "Wow, we're really solving the problem here.
We're really solving the problem of this one person who's dominant, like who's not. They don't even know who that person is." So it's just, I think, when we zoom out and we really look at it, it again, right? It's power, it's control, it's policing the women's category, and it's really just policing bodies in general, right? We think about so many other things that are attacking bodies and, mm-hmm. and autonomy. So I love how like focused you are on the humanity of, mm-hmm. of Leah, of trans women, of trans people, of yourself. Like, I think that's so powerful. So I'm curious if like there's anything else you wanted to share, sort of maybe a takeaway for our audience, our listeners, trans, queer or not, about how to really like ground ourselves in that humanity so we can be better people.
Yeah. I think it's just like being self-aware. Mm-hmm. I really hold on to the fact that at the end of the day, sports are an entertainment industry, especially professional sports.
Yep.
We are meant to entertain. People are meant to look at us and be like, I'm here for a good time. Of course, youth sports, that's a whole different issue. It comes down to having a community and having something to do for children to, mm-hmm. you know, keep them out of trouble sometimes. But
have fun.
Yeah, have bare minimum. I think, you know, it's just like them and, you know, sports are still fun for me. Mm-hmm. And when people tend to do the things that they did at NC2As last year and the lead up to that, they make swimming not fun. They make sports not fun for people.
Transphobia makes swimming not fun.
Exactly. Leah being there did not make swimming fun.
Didn't have anything. It had nothing to do with it. Swimmer.
I'm still swimming. She was doing her own thing. I was doing my own thing. We were fine. When we have to start making interviews where we're defending ourselves, swimming very quickly becomes not about swimming anymore, and I am no longer having fun, you know? And so I think my takeaway is like, as long as you're having fun and you're letting other people have fun, like that should be seen for youth sports, college sports, elite sports, like just let the fun happen. Swimming, sports are an entertainment industry.
Yeah.
And let's not make it serious and gloomy and just bad.
Well, I think one of the central points that you're making also is that like you said, I'm doing my own thing. Leah's doing hers. Yes, you're competing, but in like at the end of the day, you are in your own lane.
Yeah.
Right. And we can have that be analogy for general sports where people are always like, well, like Leah's taking something away from me or trans woman, and like, but like you are existing in your own lane and you're doing your own thing. And if we could remember that, if we could, again, centralize ourselves in first in our own humanities, I think that makes it easier to see other people's humanity.
Definitely. Fully agree with that.
Well, Erica, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. I think like you said, again, I want to repeat again, I think you are making a big difference in the world. And I think you're showing people that there's almost this, like, I guess I want to reflect back to you. There's almost this like nonchalance to your support that says, well, of course I'm going to support. Mm. And I wish people could take something from that.
Yeah.
I hope that our listeners can see that it's actually not that difficult to be supportive of people that you don't necessarily share identities with, that you maybe don't understand everything, but that it's like, I see you as a person and that's all I need.
Yeah, it's important.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for your time.
Thank you.
Wow, what an amazing conversation, and so vulnerable and giving of Erica to share as much as she did about herself and her experience. So I'm so grateful for Erica spending her time with us on Dear Skylar. Let's get right to the question. How do we bring our authentic selves to sport? So I think there's two parts of authenticity. Your own, how you experience your own self and what parts of yourself you share with others and how you really get in touch with yourself so that you can share yourself with others. And then the second part is welcoming others' authenticity. And I think that's the part that a lot of people struggle with as well, right? So two sides of authenticity or two parts of authenticity. As I was listening to Erica share about her own authenticity, there were many different parts of it. It wasn't just her sexuality, for example. There was also not holding everything in with regards to her mental health, with regards to experiencing her dad's death. She said something that really stuck with me. She said she wanted to start healing instead of just excavating wounds. So there's this bit of leaning into really what's going to make you heal, what's going to make you feel more like yourself, and how can you bring that into sport as much as possible. I also heard a bit about leaning into what sports are actually bringing you. Erica talked a lot about what sports brought her, and it wasn't the gold medals. It was about the joy, the camaraderie, the love that she experiences from her teammates. And I think that's really, really powerful. So what are sports bringing you, and how can you lean into that to help let your authenticity thrive? the word nonchalant comes to me frequently when I think about the way that Erica provides support to other people and the way she invites us to learn how to support others. Allyship doesn't mean expertship. It doesn't mean you have to know every little detail about the people you're trying to be allies for. It means you dive into humanity. As Erica said, sports will end, but we are people forever. And the thing is, focusing on humanity isn't just great for being a good person or being kind. It's also about being great at what you do. Loving, caring people are also better athletes, are also better employees, are also better partners, and so on, right? Erica made a really great point that her team is a number two team for good reason. And a lot of the love she's experienced on the team and that culture of the team is a winning culture. In conclusion, I think bringing our authentic selves to sports not only means diving into our own humanity and really sinking into what we get from sports, it's also about how can we not judge others? How can we support the humanity of others? And I think Erica is an excellent example of both these things. Thanks again, Erica, for joining us on Dear Skylar. Listeners, thanks for being here. See you next week.